It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For the past 60 years, Hospital Albert Schweitzer has provided medical care to some of Haiti's most vulnerable citizens. The facility started under the leadership of the late Dr. Larry Mellon of the Pittsburgh philanthropic family and his wife, Gwen. Since their efforts began 60 years ago, they've sent some of the best medical experts to Haiti to deal with everything from natural disasters to global health epidemics. So what is the hospital focusing on now, and how has it evolved over the past 60 years? I'm joined now in studio by Hospital Albert Schweitzer volunteer LaRushima Austin. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. And such a pleasure to be here.
A pleasure to have you. And also in studio with us is Jason Samuels. He's Major Gifts Officer for Hospital Albert Schweitzer. Jason Samuels, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
You can join our conversation with a comment or a question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Fascinating history here, and we're happy to entertain any questions or comments you may have about this hospital. And for people who don't know the history, what can you tell us about Hospital Albert Schweitzer and its relationship to the city of Pittsburgh?
Yeah, absolutely. We have great Pittsburgh roots, obviously you mentioned, by the Mellon family. And the short version is Larry Mellon kind of tried the family business and wasn't really interested in doing what the family had been doing. So he—
banking, I guess, primarily.
Banking, you know, they got into oil, they had many different things that they were involved in. And so he went out west and became a very successful cattle rancher in Arizona and was happy being with the cows and being out west. And then one day he got a copy of Life magazine, and on the cover was Albert Schweitzer. And Albert Schweitzer is known as a theologian, a medical missionary, took Western medicine to Africa. And I think the caption was something like the greatest man in the world or something like that.
This would have been about what year?
This was probably around late 40s, somewhere in that area. And Larry read this article, was just captivated by the story of what Albert Schweitzer had done, how he invested his whole life in Western Africa, and he said, I want to do that. So late in life, he was around 40, went to med school at Tulane, and his wife went, became a nurse, and then they wanted to find a place in their own hemisphere where they could start something like Albert Schweitzer did. And through various ways, they found their way to central Haiti, very rural area, and they started the hospital there in 1956, 60 years ago.
And this, would this have been under the, when Haiti was ruled by the Duvalier?
Yes, Duvalier pair, like the father. It was before the son.
Before Baby Doc.
Yes.
Before Baby Doc.
No, it's before and doing Baby Doc.
Yeah.
Baby Doc is the father. And then the son took over after when he passed.
Did this pose any particular difficulties for Mellon?
They actually were in pretty good relationship with them. And, you know, the story is on his way out, he said, hey, leave these guys alone. And because they knew what great work the Mellons were doing and what a blessing it was for the whole country to have the hospital there. So they actually had a really good relationship, and it was helpful to them in the end.
How has the hospital affected the residents of the Artibonite Valley in Haiti?
Well, as Haitian, I'm from Haiti, and I was born in Haiti. Yes, it does mean a lot. It's the core help for everybody. It's not only in the healthcare, but it's also everything from food, from health, from everything else. Yes, it does in a way, even for people in Port-au-Prince, like my father. I'm from like 3 hours away, and my father's surgery, I remember I was like 10 years old. He had surgery in that hospital. And yes, it's not only for people, it does a lot for people in Latibonite, but it does for Haiti itself.
And before this, what kind of care was there? What did people have access to?
Oh, nothing. It's basically nothing. But Mrs. Mellon program used, he used to go door to door to do immunization. And that's how it started. Not only in Artibonite, but she used to go in the mountains, valley, and also in Port-au-Prince, and people who have access to, you know, car money to take the tap-tap would travel distance just to get immunization.
Hospital Albert Schweitzer is widely known in the global public health sector for its proven preventive care that has resulted in the eradication of a whole host of terrible things, tetanus, measles, diphtheria in that particular region that it serves, as well as its significant impact on maternal and child survival rates. How did those running the hospital, how did Larry Mellon determine where its emphasis should be, or was it a matter of addressing the needs at hand?
Well, I think a little bit of both. They first got down there and they opened up the hospital and they were treating people and doing stuff. And he quickly realized that, you know, we need to prevent people from getting sick before they even get here. And so, as you mentioned,
pardon me for interrupting, but was it really an overwhelming situation at first? I'm guessing when he got there, he had to be doing sort of Uber triage just to determine who needed the help the most.
Yeah, around that time, people were dying from tetanus, from a lot of other disease, like untreated water, you know, due to like cholera and everything. It was an emergency. Situation. Children were dying, pregnant, everybody. It's like the whole, especially in that area in Artibonite, it was pretty bad. So that's why doing the triage, the assessment, and health, when you do your assessment, really, you get to see where, you know, people are dying the most. And that area was the area that people were dying the most.
So, Jason, I'll let you pick it up. So once he realized that, you know, you've got all these sick people, we need to start being more proactive in doing preventive medicine. So pick it up from there.
Yeah, so one of the things, I mean, it's basically common sense in terms of global public health care now. You work with the indigenous people. You gain their trust. You use them to work with the other community members. But before HAS was doing that, there was really nobody doing that. So early on, they realized we got to do these preventative measures. We can't go out and do them all by ourselves. The way to be the most effective is to work with the people who are here, who have lived here. They know each other. And so they started doing kind of door-to-door stuff, especially telling mothers about tetanus. There was a practice where after a baby was born, they would rub mud or charcoal on the umbilical cord. And, of course, that's where the tetanus was living, and lots of kids got it. But it was just a custom and a practice that had gone on for, you know, hundreds of years there. And so they realized they couldn't break that cycle themselves. They needed to work with people that they trusted and could relay the message to them. So they did things like that. They did things like water projects, wells, capping springs that were coming out. In fact, we still provide clean water for about 120,000 people in our service area right now as a preventative measure. So it started early on. They realized this is what we needed to do to keep the hospital from being totally overrun. And it continues today as one of our main focuses.
And who has access to the hospital? Who did in the early days and up to now? Who can show up at the doorstep and receive treatment?
Well, anybody can show up, but we have a little fee structure set up. It's not free healthcare. We charge a small bit of money. It generates a little bit of revenue for us, about 6 or 7% of our operating costs. But the way the fee structure set up is that if you live within our service area, which Lower Shama had mentioned, it's about 610 square miles. And in there, there's somewhere between 350,000 and 400,000 people. And we're basically the only game in town for them in terms of health care. And if you live within that area, the fees are less. If you come from somewhere like Port-au-Prince or outside the service area, we'll still care for you, but the fees are a little bit higher. And the reason for that is just to help the hospital from being overrun by people from everywhere that are coming because they know the healthcare is really good there. Now, if you show up and you can't afford
it. That was my next question.
I can see it. I can see it coming. If you show up and you can't afford it, you will still get healthcare. We have a little fund set up that everyone will be treated if they're there. But we like people to participate in it as much as possible so they value what they're getting.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about 60 years of Hospital Albert Schweitzer, established in Haiti by the late Dr. Larry Mellon of the Pittsburgh Philanthropic Family and his wife, Gwen, and looking at the arc of those 60 years, how things have evolved at that hospital, what is happening there now with Hospital Albert Schweitzer volunteer LaRushima Austin and also Jason Samuels, Major Gifts Officer for Hospital Albert Schweitzer. And this particular hospital played a very important role in an event that is seared into the memories of Americans and certainly Haitians and people all around the world, and that was the 2010 earthquake. What can you tell us about that, LaRushima?
Well, I always mention that the Albert Schweitzer Hospital is being known as the core resources in Haiti, not only for the earthquake, after the earthquake, but before that. But after the earthquake, now it became the hospital where to go, because the hospital in Port-au-Prince, who used to do, basic care, and now it's in bad shape. And then now Albert Schweitzer, now it's becoming the place to be. So from my visit, I witnessed a lot of it's like they see over 100 people coming from not only the community, but outside the community.
And from what I've read, almost every day, the hospital, if not every day, the hospital is over capacity.
Yes.
So how is that being addressed? If that is stretching the resources of the hospital, how does the hospital respond to that situation?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. We're about 108% capacity last year. And we do the best we can do with what we have. And we're always looking for more resources to better serve the population. We are looking for ways to cut costs at the hospital. In fact, this year we were able to get a solar project online. One of the biggest expenses for us had been diesel fuel. We're totally off the grid, so we do provide all of our own electricity, water, sanitation. So to get these diesel generators that have been running for 60 years on diesel fuel off of that and running partially on solar power cut back some expenses for us, and so we're able to help that way too.
And now we mentioned that there was certainly the earthquake crisis that existed 6 years ago and that I'm sure was an ongoing problem for years after. Now, on top of that, you have a situation with Zika. Mm-hmm. How is that being addressed?
We have we put together kind of a 3-year comprehensive Zika response plan that we're trying to get funded, of course. Zika, there's no vaccine for Zika. It's a mosquito-borne virus, and so there's some challenges with that. I think they're working on a vaccine now, but there is no vaccine. So really, prevention and education are the main strategies. So we have prevention, education, and family planning. If people choose to delay pregnancy until people figure out exactly what's happening with this Zika virus, is one of the other things that we're trying to provide more resources for, so families have that option if they want to do that.
LaRushima, what are some of the stories that you can tell us? As a volunteer, I'm guessing you've seen all sorts of amazing things. What would be one or two stories that you could relate to us?
Oh, sure. During my visit back in September, my best experience was when I went to their mobile. And even though I'm from Haiti, but I was never exposed into, the mountain region and going far away from where I was born. But going to the mountain to their one of their mobiles. I worked with women and children. It was a day that they received, children received vitamins and, you know, other things. So I was able to do, because I'm from Haiti, I know the culture, I was able to educate them and as little as hand washing due to cholera and untreated water, and also educate them in domestic violence and prevention and all that. But what's really stayed with me is the fact that in here, like in the U.S., you get to have option. Over there, you don't have that. Because if you don't get your children immunization, if you don't get that, they will die. But up here, you have that option to do whatever you want with your children. And also, mothers, they were coming from like 2 hours away walking just to come to their mobile. And the mobile is not, okay, in my head, the mobile was like a car, maybe some mud house. No, it was under a tree. Seeing people, like we had over 60 women with children coming. They brought their chairs. They brought their, you know, sit on the ground just to get that treatment. It was amazing and rewarding to see. So this will stay with me forever. So I said, you know what? As a professional in Pittsburgh, I want to stay involved. I want to do this over, not only as Haitian, but as a human being, you know, as a woman to woman, you know, get to chat with another person. It was amazing. That's my story.
The hospital has existed for 60 years. How would you say, Jason, that its mission has changed over six decades?
Or at least
the operation.
The operation has, technology has afforded us some great steps forward. We're still making some strides there. We still have some work to do there. But essentially, the mission is pretty much the same. It was to collaborate with the people of the Artimonite Valley to help them with their daily quality of life and health care, and we still continue to do that. We still continue to go out and conduct these mobile clinics and work with community health workers and birth attendants. So in those ways, we're very much the same. But technology, as I mentioned earlier, the solar power has allowed us to cut our costs a little bit. We have digital X-ray system up and running. We're working on expanding our bandwidth and maybe playing with some telemedicine so that our doctors can have access to training from Western doctors and even do some consults if we can get that stuff up and running as well. But essentially, we're doing what we've been doing for 60 years and still doing a great job of it, I think.
Well, it's an amazing story. Hospital Albert Schweitzer, which was a facility started under the leadership of the late Dr. Larry Mellon of the Pittsburgh Philanthropic Family, his wife Gwen. It's still going strong today, 60 years later. My guests in studio have been Jason Samuels, Major Gifts Officer for Hospital Albert Schweitzer. Jason, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And one of the very important hospital volunteers, a native of Haiti, LaRushima Austin, thank you so much for being with us here in studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, we'll look at a new app called Jaunt, providing information about Pittsburgh's architecture as you roam the city. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.